Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 313, episode 2 of
Der Daily Zeitgeist,
a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Tuesday, November 14th, 2023.
Yep, National Seatbelt Day. Buckle up, buttercup, or chuckle fuck, or whatever the Elon Musk fucking chat thing wanted you to say. Also, World Diabetes Day, National Pickle Day, National Spicy Guacamole Day. I don't know if there's one for regular guac and one for the real ones.
Oh,
we need
sure.
A little bit of hot heat.
I feel like there's like multiple National Guacamole Days just based on
I love whack-a-mole.
It's a great sport.
Yeah.
And then we've been lobbying to get it into the Olympics for a long time.
Family PJ Day is that's just, I guess, for families to just put on your favorite pajamas and have a little party.
Yeah,
I guess because it's getting cold. Sure. I don't have pajamas.
Open auditions for the Christian Nightmares Twitter thread, I feel like.
right.
Family pajamas.
Family PJ Day.
Anyway, my family has matching pajamas. They're pretty cute.
Good for you.
Good for you. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I always feel like my toilet skibidi, but I don't know what that means. Oh, or I always feel like my wife is judging me, and I swore it wasn't pee. Oh, I always feel like my wife is judging me, but I said it was Slurpee. Oh, that is courtesy of Connie Schwia on the Discord. I am so sorry for not knowing how to pronounce that, but the AKA was on point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Hey, it's Miles Gray. Just keeping it simple. The Lord of Lankershim and Blackenese experimental artist, your boy Kusama. Thank you so much for having me on this day of day. It was a Tuesday? Yeah, it's Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh, you know, Garfield had some things to say about Mondays, but what about Tuesdays? Am I right? With Heathcliff, we need somebody to step up and talk about how Tuesdays.
Did Kathy have something to say about Tuesdays?
Am I right? Mm-hmm. Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by an award-winning staff writer for Slate, whose work focuses on identity and religion, and who has been doing invaluable reporting on what is happening in Israel right now. He's appeared on CNN, NPR, and most importantly, this show. He's been featured in the New York Post, Adweek, Gawker, the Huffington Post. Please welcome back to the show, Ayman Ismail!
Ayman! Assalamu alaikum, my brothers. Assalamu alaikum.
What's happening, man?
Alaikum salam, bro.
Oh, my God.
I know. We were just talking. I was like, it's been a minute. And I was like, we got to have you back. And man, shit is so fucking horrible wherever you look, and I know with the work that you do, having such proximity to
what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank and everything. I know it's very difficult. So, we really appreciate you coming on, man. It's not easy.
I'm glad, man. I'm really glad you guys aren't afraid to talk about it. I've been listening to the show, and you guys have had some of the best critiques, responses, and the most fiery rhetoric. So, shouts out to you guys for keeping it up and for inviting me, for real.
Oh, no. It's just, I mean,
thrilled to have you.
Yeah, man. And again, I think it's also important, like, we've had, you know, like guests on to speak about what's been going on. But I think also one thing we've talked about really consistently is how the media is portraying things and how consent is being manufactured for some really grisly, awful things. You want to call it genocide, ethnic cleansing, war crimes, whatever, pick one. So I think, having your insight today is also going to be really invaluable for not just us, but everybody listening. So again, man, I know it's,
thank you.
Yeah, I know how difficult it is to talk about this stuff too, but honestly, we're just glad to have you, man. We're glad to have you.
I've got one in the chamber already, so just let me know. First of all, let me answer your first question. I condemn Hamas. Answer that first
okay,
one.
Yeah, damn. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay. Uh-huh.
Oh, good. I'm glad you saw that in the doc. But does he condemn Hamas though?
Do you condemn them? Okay, now what do you
say? It's
saying?
A weird, because it sounds like I'm coming back and like saying that as a response, but that was the first thing written in the doc. But do you, sir? However, I'm sorry, I haven't said anything yet. However, do you, sir, condemn Hamas?
Yeah, what's new with you?
It's been crazy watching the news because, you know, contrary to what most people say, I think we still are in the golden age of media. There are so many amazing reporters who are doing such amazing work. It's just incredible the kind of work that's coming out right now.
Yeah.
However, at the same time, there's some of the worst work. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is that it's people who work in journalism now know the game. They know how to keep their skepticism. They know how to draw out the story in an interesting way. What I can't understand is how when it comes to just this one thing, whenever it comes to Palestine, everybody forgets all their training. Mm-hmm. It's like we're starting from scratch. It just drives me nuts seeing so many people make so many mistakes, taking the Israeli military's narrative as fact and casting doubt and shadow into anything on the other side, regardless of who it's coming from. Which to me is like, you guys see what you're doing, right? But you see it everywhere, and it's been driving me nuts.
Yeah.
Is it a mistake at that point? Like, is it, or is it just kind of their marching orders and what they think they have to do? Like, at this point, you know? But yeah, it's a fucking nightmare out there. Before we get into all of it, we do like to get to know our guests a little bit better and ask you, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Yeah. So everything in my search history right now is. From just typing in the names of articles and Wayback Machine, because I do not have subscriptions to things. So what I do is I use proxies to get around paywalls to read everything from Harrods to the New York Times to everything. I know journalists shouldn't say that. Subscribe to Slate Plus and all that.
Hey, you're the reason why I subscribe to Slate Plus. So
yeah. I'm on a there budget, dude.
I subscribed twice to Slate Plus. How much I fuck with the Vision. But no, I get that, dude. That's why I'm like, whenever I see it, I'm like, please be an archive fucking post to this article. And I'm like, because I'm not giving money to the Wall Street Journal to find out about how workers are wrong about everything. Yeah. It's out there.
Yeah. Everything in my search history right now is either that or trying to like convert times. Like, it's so hard to keep track of, like, what time everything is happening. Because Gaza time, London time, every single spot has its own time. And I really need that to stop. I need it to, like, some kind of uniform time, please.
Yeah.
No matter what. It's like, yo, it's noon. It's like, but it's actually 3 a.m. for us. No, man, we're doing 1 o'clock for everything.
New rule. No time zones everywhere.
We kill people who are everywhere to just put in parentheses Newark time zone, please.
Oh, right. Yeah, for sure.
I feel like people could get used to that. Just be like, what time is it here? Oh, it's always the same time. It's always the same time, but here it's dark out when it's 3 p.m.
And
yeah. I don't know. Time zones were invented for trains. We're over that shit. We're not like, well, how about that? Over here, it's a little bit different.
Right.
I feel like, I don't know. Has anybody ever pitched that? I bet there's a think piece worth writing about, like, if there was a uniform time, things would actually run more efficiently.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Sounds like a mess, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and if you want, I have a funnier one. So in my search history, there's a whole block around like 5 o'clock where it goes rainbow, whale, octopus, baby shark, octopus, shark, shark, shark,
yo,
octopus. So this was my son pointing at the screen and wanting to summon things like it was magic. And
yeah.
Blew his mind. Another shark show up.
They call it Chrome. My kids call it, can we do Chrome? And I'm just like, all right, let's do Chrome. And they just tell me what to search, and it's just Google image search history.
Yeah. I feel like for them, it's like Magic School Bus. Like, we're making things appear in their...
Right.
Magic School Bus still goes, too. Like, they really... We got a recent bedtime story from the, like, old school Magic School Bus days, and they're into it. They're referencing various characters. They're referencing, like, little jokes for a minute. So, shout out to the Magic School Bus still holding up. You know,
did you show them the 1987 hit film Innerspace?
No, we haven't done Innerspace yet. I need to put that on my to watch
that
list.
Shit, I remember that was like when I saw that Magic School Bus when the body, I'm like, bro, this is Innerspace. I saw this shit when I was a kid. Like, I was so I felt that they were ripping off Innerspace when they would go inside the body. But anyway, yeah.
Seen
this. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fun. Yeah, because my one son is like obsessed with the digestive system. Because I think recognizes that it ends up in poo.
Yeah.
But like from very early age, he like first thing he wants to see if he like gets around a Google image search or, you know, an encyclopedia, he's looking up like some animal's digestive system. Wow. Which is weird. So similar searches, but it would just be octopus digestive system, unicorn digestive system.
Right.
And that's how rainbow sherbet is made. Unicorn digestive system.
Does he know like camels got like multiple stomachs? Does he know about that shit yet? That would probably
I don't think so. I'm going to fucking blow his mind, man. Yeah, I need to consult you more on the parenting stuff. Innerspace and camels multiple stomachs.
Has nothing to do with parenting, just like my weird stoner memory. I'm like, about this one, dude? Innerspace?
You gave me one of his favorite books, that Star Wars like tech guide.
Oh, the technical manual? Yeah.
Technical manual? Yeah. He's still holler at me with that nerd shit. Heavy.
Yeah.
What is something you think is overrated, Eamon?
I'm going to say cousins. I'm going to say cousins are overrated.
Wow.
Here's why. I have cousins in Egypt, and I told them I'm coming, and so far they've given me like, they've asked for 3 iPhones. They've asked for jeans. They've asked for boots. I love my cousins, and I'm going to try my hardest to get them everything, but like, god damn.
Yeah. Yo, but you over there, bro.
I know. I'm going to get an iPhone 14s and just be like, this one just came out. Trust me. Believe me.
Bro, I'll send you. You can have my. I think I have to switch mine now. I'm like, I'll send you mine off the strength. You can picture. Like, I was in a case. Shit looked clean. You know what I mean? Yeah.
My cousin will be ever grateful. I tell you that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll talk after.
But no, I would give you mine because I'm about to upgrade. But mine is the one that gives your balls radiation when you put it in your pocket.
iPhone 12.
Yeah. The heat warmers.
Yeah. The iPhone 12. Yeah.
Hey, it's fine. It's a low level of radiation.
Radioactive. Yeah. Radioactive.
I remember like in Japan, my cousins always ask for vitamins.
That's wild.
That's also on the list. That's right.
They don't have supplements like that out here. And they're like, can you get me? And I was like, what? For real? And go to Trader Joe's or somewhere, bring a big ass thing of fucking vitamin C and shit. People are like,
You're like, I'll get you the newest NES game. They're like,
They're like, we're on PlayStation 6, fam.
It's 1989 and we're on PlayStation 6.
Y'all won't even have that shit till 2028.
Yeah. So you're headed to Egypt pretty soon?
I'm headed to Egypt in a month for my daughter's first birthday. We went to Egypt for my son's first birthday. And so we got to introduce him to family. And I think it's really important to like take somebody when they're really, really young.
Yeah.
So I think if you're a little bit, you know, tied to it, take some pictures of him at the pyramids, on the Nile, do all that fun stuff. I mean, this is part of the reason why I'm a photographer in the first place. So I picked up photography after like going through all of my family's old photos and and seeing all these pictures of myself being young, family in Egypt that I hadn't seen in a long time. And I remember it feeling like this was the most important, the most valuable thing I have in my whole family. Like, I want these pictures.
Yeah.
And so I picked up photography thinking I need to document everything. Like, everything is valuable. And now that I have a kid, like, number one on every single list is to just document, document, document. I'm taking a crazy amount of photos. I'm like really going hard on that end. And yeah. So we did it for the first kid. Now we got to do it for the second kid. Get pictures. Like, literally the first thing I do when I go to anybody's house is I dump my baby on their lap and say, all right, smile, taking a picture. Yeah.
Like, you might be famous. I don't want to tell my kids. They're like, they held you as a baby.
It makes a difference, man. Like, yeah. I remember, like, seeing all these pictures and being excited, being like, who's that holding me? Who, like, who is this person? I don't even know who this person is. And my mom will be like, oh, yeah, that's your cousin. Yeah, he lived in Japan for a while. Oh, that's your aunt. Yeah, she taught me English when I was a little kid. Like, all that stuff made me feel so much more real. And so when I got to see them for the first time, when I started going to Egypt with my own money, when I got a job, I was trying to go, like, at least every year. And meeting those people felt so much more exciting. Like, I felt connected to them. And I recognized streets. And, like, I'm telling you, this box that my mom gave me of photos is just like a gigantic cardboard box, just loose photos thrown into it. And so just that treasure trove and going in and discovering and trying to match up which photos are taken with which camera because of the shape of the print and everything has been...
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, one of the most enjoyable things I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to be able to recreate that for my kids. That's all.
Like, because we live in such an era of, like, digital photography and not printing shit anymore. And, like, So many memories are, like, just having these, like, same, like, 40 photos in my house, like, growing up. That I was like, yeah, that's my grandma. Yeah, that's my great-grandma or whatever. That you kind of have these reminders. And to your point, like, asking questions, because that actually helps your parent, like, help my parents, like, jog their memory. And then actually begin sharing things that are a little bit further. And they're like, hey, your grandmother was, you know, she was a fantastic woman. We're like, oh, shit. Oh, okay. This is my uncle. He only talked in rhyme because when they were kids, somebody threw a bullet in the fireplace and it hit him in his head. And now he could only speak in rhymes. Yeah, like shit like that. Like, where my grandfather was like, let me tell you about him. Yeah. So I definitely, like, pictures are such a, like, you know, they're like, it's so wild. Like, because now we can take pictures, like, at will. It's wild that we don't cherish them the same way we did when we were printing film. So yeah, you really got to lean into having that shit printed for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of spots that still do it for super cheap. Like, I use my local CVS because they have, like, a printer. And so I'll just like send them a batch of, like, 100 of my favorite ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do it at the end of every year when I have, like, a sale on Black Friday or, oh, it's coming up. But yeah, I'm doing that every single year. Ooh. Just because I love having the physical copy.
Yeah.
And I like making little photo albums and keeping them out, like, on the countertop so that the kids can explore it, because now that they're getting older, they love to flip through it too.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's special to me to have, like, a little book of being like, this is your first year alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
God damn. I should really do that.
Gift just ideas. Like, Christmas is coming up.
Yeah.
Like, all the, like, conscientious, like, people I know, like, people who are just, like, very mindful. Like, you know, my sister, or, like, you know, we have these friends, they always have, like, these photograph books of, like, this was our trip to this place, and this was, you know, like, they just and it's so beautiful, and every time I'm like, man,
how you do that,
doing that yesterday.
I never
get myself to do it. So,
and you know, you probably got so many photos on the fucking phone and shit.
Easy,
just got to go through it, right?
I love going back through the pictures, but there's also something unnerving when I'm like, I don't remember them looking like this. Like, I'm taking the picture, I'm talking to them, I don't remember this interaction, I don't remember them ever sounding like that, because you just, it's just, you know, you see them every single day, like, constantly, and they're all you think about. And so, yeah, it's weird.
You're on your dad mode, man. Half that is autopilot.
That's right. What is something you think is underrated?
I'm going to say cousins.
Go on.
You know, after saying that, I felt really bad, because I do love my cousins.
Yeah, of course. You know, I get you.
Like, they can't, like, afford, because, like, the Egyptian economy is in the fucking shithole right now. So what they're going to do to pay me back is, like, set up trips for me and my family. So one of them is going to set up, like, a Nile cruise for us. The other one's going to set up, like, maybe a backpacking trip somewhere. Like, they're also going to pick us up from the airport, take care of us, pamper us. Like, they do that every trip regardless of gifts. Yeah. They don't even do it for the gifts. It's just that the gifts for me is like a way to pay him back and show appreciation. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I really shouldn't be talking shit about these cousins, man. They're really like the reason why I go.
And I know they listen. Yeah, yeah. Shout out to your cousins.
Yeah, yeah,
man.
Yeah. They don't really speak English, but they're listening. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Day one listeners. Yeah. Oh, man. Amazing. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll get into it. We'll be right back.
Zeit Gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in-line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, you know, I had a bustling retail business, and I need, you know, maybe some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/TDZ, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zeit Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we're back.
We are.
And since October 7th, we've been talking about the perplexing way the media has been covering this, the discounting to the lives of Palestinian people, innocent Palestinian people and children, but just generally just the rules of engagement seem to have changed kind of in the mainstream media. But Ayman, you know, you are seeing this happening, and you know, as a member of the media, like covering it, I'm just curious to get your perspective on, like, what has been happening, what are you seeing behind the scenes, and then like how is that affecting how we're hearing about or not hearing about what's happening in Israel?
Yeah, man. No, this is media literacy is everything these days, because it's equally important to like create good journalism as it is for the audience to know how to read and interpret like good journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean is this, right? I'm really, really upset by the way that I have like younger siblings, and my wife's siblings are
like much younger than she is. So I have one that just graduated high school, another one who's in college. And, you know, they get all of their news from social media. They only know what's going on through TikTok and through Instagram. And I feel like a lot of people don't really know how to distinguish between people just posting things, opinion, news clips of commentators, from the actual journalism, which are like firsthand accounts, people on the ground doing journalism, and this like equivocating between being like an activist talking about what's happening and being a journalist and trying to report the facts as they are has been driving me nuts. So there's two things happening when we think about like how the media has been like covering this. On the one hand, I'm seeing so much misinformation and disinformation spreading like crazy on social media. And because everybody's in their own little social media bubble, what people on either side are, you know, and in this case, there's a lot more than just two sides, but anybody who's consuming media on social media right now are getting just like this fire hose of information. And some of it's real and some of it's not, and some of it's made up and some of it's like from 10 years ago, repackaged to look like it was just shot yesterday.
Right.
And so you have people who are Zionist and sympathetic with, you know, the IDF and what they're doing right now to like secure Israel, who are like sharing these videos of like people in body bags who are wrapped in the white, like we've been seeing a lot from Gaza, who are getting up to check their phones, you know, because it's like actually a clip from a protest in Lebanon, you know, or, yeah, or something like that. But like that clip is being repackaged and shared as, you know, evidence of Hamas making up casualties and that the IDF is pure-hearted and pure intention. But on the other end, there was a viral clip that went viral maybe 2 days ago that supposedly showed like Apache helicopters shooting Israelis who were fleeing from their lives when the Hamas came in with those paragliders at the music festival.
Yeah.
Which is also like, you know, repackaged. I think it was from like the 2 or 3 days afterwards when those clips were shot and published by the IDF, showing their attack helicopters attacking militants who were trying to either flee or take more ground in Israel. And so those are two examples.
But they were being packaged to say that this was Israel shooting their own people.
They were saying, the reason why the casualties numbers were so high is because the Israelis were also shooting everybody.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know, I should also caveat that there is like a few eyewitness testimonies of survivors from the kibbutz who talked about how they were, when they were being taken hostage, that Israeli soldiers showed up and just started spraying bullets and hit some of their own people. This is eyewitness testimony. You can read about it on Haaretz. But at the same time, the role that the journalist has to play is to find primary sources and report it out. And the way that so many people at prominent outlets that have a humongous responsibility, an outsized responsibility to tell the truth in this particular war, where information like this is kind of just going crazy, just flying over our heads, has been catastrophic. A good example is right after the beginning of the war, the Palestinian ambassador for the PA for London for England was being interviewed by the BBC. And he just talked about how he lost like 7 family members in an Israeli bombardment. And this guy, you can tell, was being super stoic. He looked like he was just crying because he just found this out. And he's on the news ready to talk about what's happening. And the presenter asked him to condemn Hamas like immediately after he shared that he lost 7 family members.
Yeah.
And this callousness goes beyond what a reporter ought to do. You know, we should be asking people about what they see, what they feel, trying to get primary sources to tell us something about what's happening in front of them. Asking somebody who has a wealth of knowledge about being an ambassador for the PA, not Hamas, which is PA's, they run the West Bank, Hamas runs the Gaza. This person is an ambassador for them. So he's also lost family to the bombardment. He's in a unique position to talk about what's happening from his perspective. But this person who was interviewing him, this journalist, was asking him about something that he's disconnected to, and was trying to make a moral argument with this person. And that to me felt like, I don't know, I was disappointed. I was like, you know how to do this. Like, this is your job. You don't have any problems doing this with any other subject. Why is it when we come to talking about Palestine and talking to Palestinians, we skip the part where we're supposed to interrogate how they're experiencing the world, and we skip to, well, how do we get the, well, how do we hold them accountable for what the other side is saying?
Right.
You don't see that when it comes to those same people interviewing Israeli ambassadors or Israeli prime ministers. When they talk to their own people, they say, we are going to flatten Palestine. We are going to eradicate Hamas and all of its supporters. And they use a lot of this genocidal rhetoric. And they talk about having a second Nakba. Ministers in the current Israeli government talk this way. But when they come on to do these interviews, they ask them, well, where were you on October 7th?
Yeah.
How are you affected by this tragedy? Which are, you know, I'm not here to like browbeat these people for doing their job, because those are good questions to ask people who are going through this, and that suffering is real.
Right.
But where is that when we're talking to Palestinian sources?
Yeah.
Right. Just today, the New York Times put out a piece in their incredible podcast, The Daily, not as good as The Daily Zeitgeist, but you know, of if course, you have extra time, you could probably
rip off artists.
To it.
A lot of people might think they came first. We came first. Thanks.
Yeah, I was going to make that point. But you know, they did this whole episode where they talked to Gazan doctors, doctors who are in these hospitals who are operating. And the host asked one of them, well, the IDF is saying that Hamas is doing XYZ in these hospitals. Like, what are you seeing? Which is like a good question to ask. But the people who are just being constantly asked to take these political arguments that one side is making in and trying to rationalize them and trying to breathe air into them and give oxygen to them, the guy had a meltdown, man. He freaked out. He was like, yo, we are having to choose which kids die and which kids live. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough resources to give kids who need amputations any kind of anesthesia. So they are awake and while we're hacking off their body parts. Like, you know, the trauma in this guy's voice when he was like, why the hell are you asking me about Hamas right now?
Right.
Yeah.
I think was incredibly emblematic of the what we've done to these people, you know, by right. flattening them as being like this response to Hamas. These people are people, man. So I would love to see the media make a better effort at exercising just basic journalism
right.
by asking people about what they see and where they're at versus trying to turn everything into a back and forth.
Or they're propagandizing them in real time. You know what I mean?
You want to talk about like Hamas, there's Hamas spokespeople who are giving interviews.
Right.
Like you can do that piece if you want to talk to them and be like, well, we heard about, you know, the fuel being withheld from XYZ. What do you have to say to that? You know,
right.
But these people who are on the ground, these doctors who have to sleep in operating rooms, who can't leave because the flood of people who need help is just constant. The people who have brought their own families to hide in these hospitals too. I mean, there are thousands of people in these hospitals, and you could just imagine the chaos by opening this window and talking to these people. And just asking them about like Hamas, it just drove me nuts. Like you would never see that. You would never see somebody talking to somebody hiding in their escape room in the kibbutz, you know, when that was happening. And if the media were able to get them on the phone, you would never imagine them being like, well, what do you think about Netanyahu saying that the settlements are about, you know,
Is he putting y'all at risk? He's putting y'all at risk, right? Because
a lot of them would say, yeah, hell yes, he is. Like, you know, a lot of people feel like Netanyahu's policies are not popular. Like he's fucking incredibly far right and fascist. And like, if they were willing to ask those fucking questions, I feel like that would also be.
Well, it just kind of leaves out the not even elephant in the room. The biggest dimension of this is oppression.
Yeah.
And to just skirt by them, be like, well, you condemn Hamas, right? Like, let's keep reinforcing, because I see this so much in the rhetoric of people who are defending what the IDF is doing in the Israeli government, of keeping the focus on Hamas, about being like, free these people from Hamas. And like, that's what it is. And rather than really like widening out the focus here to really understand all the dimensions of it, because to your point, like when someone is bringing up these facts that is, you know, meant to tell a very human story about Palestinian people, to then bring it to, well, what about Hamas, completely just takes the wind out of that take or what the point someone's trying to make, to just make it purely about, right, there is that, but what about this other thing that we can agree is bad? Let's talk about the bad thing, because I don't want to keep talking about how innocent people are being brutalized through no fault of their own. Right. And I think that's also been really hard to watch too.
Totally. And what drives me nuts is that these are like allegations, right? There's been no proof put forth by the Israeli government, but there's just not enough scrutiny to sort of just say, okay, well, the Israeli government is saying this. Is that true? Like we almost, I've seen too many media outlets and journalists skipping that step and going straight to, okay, well, we need to now ask the other side that this allegation is being made of to defend themselves for it. When this, I mean, we need to see proof, man, before anything else.
Right.
This idea about propaganda, right? This idea that it came about after the popular Black Lives Matter uprisings across the country, after George Floyd was killed, where it was obvious that the police, when they issue statements, I think a lot of people suddenly realize that they are incentivized to lie.
Right.
And that you really, that first account that they gave was, well, he was on drugs and he was attacking us and, you know, he was fighting back and all this stuff that after you see the clips, you know, it's not even close to being true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, this is, I feel like there's overlaps here. And I think part of the lesson that we learned there in journalism and in people who are consuming media is that, you know, the police are incentivized to protect their own skin. I wish I could see more of that when we're looking about Palestine. This idea that Israel has a long track record, not the Israeli government, I gotta be specific because Israelis are as diverse as any place else in the world. The Israeli government has a long track record of lying. We saw it when they killed the journalist Shirin Abu Akleh. We saw it when they killed those four boys, those four preteens on the beach with worship. We saw that with, there's like so many examples, man, of like them denying that they did something when they're doing it. So I would love to see the same amount of scrutiny being like, well, you're making these claims. We need to see proof, or we need to hold out to see like what everybody else is saying.
You know? Right.
It feels like we're so eager to take this narrative and put it out.
Is there like a dimension? Because like we talk about this all the time, like how, especially in American media, like there's people can't like grapple with white supremacy or systemic oppression and journalists can't. And a lot of people talk about how like what it takes to actually get to a certain newsroom and like what the culture is of a specific outlet that sort of self-filters in a way that you're only going to get people who are kind of know how to like read from the same book. When that time comes, are you like, do you see it as a dimension of just sort of like these ingrained sort of like just the lack of American curiosity or about like honestly reporting about imperialism? Or is it like other, you know, because we see also like these like McCarthyite type activities that are happening where people, if they deign to speak out about what's happening, that people are coming for their careers and things like that. How do you see is it bad habits? Is it external factors? Is it a combination of things? Like, how do you kind of see like the environment that people are operating in when they just take the word of a IDF commander and be like, okay, that's what they said. Okay, print that without evidence and we'll just run with that.
Yeah, I mean, it breaks my fucking heart, man. I've been trying to like not cry all day and I'm like fighting it back now because what you said about the lack of curiosity really... It like hit something right on my heart, dude, because that's what it is. It is, man. It's this basic, like basic reflex that's maybe inside me because I have Arab heritage, or I don't know what it is, man. But like, I cannot for the life of me understand why there's not this curiosity where people are just satisfied with it being like, it's a religious war. Mm-hmm. And so they're responding to their religion. And so it makes sense that they want to eliminate just Jewish people. And they use that as a way to just justify making claims like was made on the Congress floor recently, that there is no such thing as a Palestinian civilian.
Right.
Right. It's like when the Israeli government says that we're going to punish the people who are giving out candy. Or giving candy, or like the people they elected Hamas. And it's like, where's the curiosity to say, okay, what are the polls saying?
Right.
Because if you look for the polls, like you would for any other community when you're trying to understand like what this community is experiencing or how they feel, there are polls, man. People go and they do studies about this stuff. Gaza has been under siege for like the greater part of the last 20 years. This has been like a, you know, the curiosity of academics you know, people mm-hmm. who are going in and finding out, oh, actually, more than 70% of the people in Gaza, when they were asked if peace was option, would they want to be live in peace with Israel as their neighbors? And 75%, I don't know the exact number, but more than 70% were like, yeah, we want yeah. peace.
Yeah.
But you almost don't, you don't even see that number quoted anywhere because there's no curiosity. There's no thought experiment of like, well, are these people like us where we're responding to many different things? There's this idea that is really prevalent, I think, among a lot of writers and journalists that the issue is that there's an ideological conflict.
Right.
That if only each side could just get along, then this problem would get solved. Right. That there are actual partners for peace on either end of this that are being usurped by these like radical ideological groups. This is not the case here, man. This is not the case. What you said about the imbalance of power here is everything, because I think this is really cuts through to how so many people who are sympathetic with the Palestinian cause actually feel about this. And it drives me nuts seeing some of these protests being described, the protests that we've seen across the country, across the world. I think London just had the biggest protest ever in its history, and it was for Palestine. This being condensed as it being like a pro-Hamas rally or an anti-Israel rally. You know, the idea that these people could just be flattened into like this responding to this one part of this conflict drives me nuts.
Yeah.
You know, where's the curiosity? I mean, send a reporter, talk to these people.
Yeah.
Find out what they're saying. They're filming themselves. They're telling you what they're saying. The same thing with From the River to the Sea.
Right.
Palestine will be free. The Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib just got censured by her own colleagues on the Democratic side who helped the obviously bad faith right wing use that rallying cry to punish her. Now, none of the reporting I've seen makes context of what she was actually saying in the speech where she said that she wants peace for everybody. They just took the right wing's word for it that she was calling for genocide. She was calling for genocide, man. Come on.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
When saying freedom. Yeah.
And also the speech, where did she give it? Where's the curiosity?
Right.
Right.
Where did she give the speech? She gave it at a Jewish Voices for Peace rally.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah.
What? Like, this is basic journalism 101 that you'll see in every context except for this. And it makes me want to tear my eyes out, man.
It drives me nuts. I mean, this is what's so difficult to watch, too, after going through the summer of 2020 and understanding how oppression affects people. And you, like they were doing this, like this is why like I'm so cynical about how our media operates, because it's operating not even to inform people. It's there to just preserve these systems of oppression under like, because these questions that are asked, like similar to like in 2020, every now and then you'd hear a reporter ask somebody who's at a protest why they're there. Like everything was always like, and we're here with the police. We're here with, Sheriff Villanueva, who's telling us about what is happening in Los Angeles, and getting this perspective that is meant to just, like to your point, flatten this movement into like a very easy to digest. Like these people just like want chaos or something, and it's not that great of a thing. Slowly, I feel like those things changed because I think there are enough people in America to kind of begin to grapple with that somewhat. But this also just feels so disgusting and uncomfortable to watch because it really pulls out just the inherent Islamophobia that exists in this country too, because I feel like it's so a lot of people just want to reflexively just cast people who like in Palestine as being like, yeah, well, you know, like they voted for Hamas, so that means they're bad and it's that simple. Mm-hmm. And that really is so difficult to have to sit through because to your point, this is all happening while innocent people are suffering under that. And as many people want to say, well, they voted for Hamas. Well, then what's happening in the West Bank? Right. Because Hamas is not in power in the West Bank. The PA is, you know, and like, and so where is that argument now? Because we're only seeing increased violence there as well. But, you know, it's always this lack of humanity that's extended to these people in such a like casual way is really unnerving because, you know, it makes me feel like I'm living in a place where more and more people are like, yeah, some people are just not human to me. Right. And that is really, really frightening and horrific and such a difficult thing to grapple with.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There seems like there's a real tension between people versus the leaders because, Ayman, as you mentioned, the polling suggests that Hamas is very unpopular and, you know, the Netanyahu government in the lead up was viewed as extreme and, you know, was being protested throughout Israel. And we're seeing these massive protests for peace and for like more humane policies and more humane actions going forward. But when the mainstream media covers it, they take the quotes from these inhumane leaders. And then that becomes sort of the marching orders for like the two different sides, when it does feel like there are a lot of people who are seeing the same thing that we're seeing, but they're just...
Yo.
Yeah,
it drives me nuts because it feels like people forgot that right before all this happened, there were thousands of Israelis protesting against their far right government.
Yeah,
and there were also Palestinians in Gaza protesting, thousands of people in Gaza protesting against Hamas, which in that case could be dangerous, right? Because we know that Hamas is they basically rule like military thugs. They shoot people and they drag their corpses in the street. And so you have to imagine how fucking brave these people are for protesting in the streets in Gaza.
Yeah.
But that happened. Are they innocent? Yes. Do they want never-ending bloodshed? No, they were chanting, "We want to live." Like, that was one of the chants. So, you know, I think all of this context is important. I realize and I recognize that in the wake of something like on October 7th, there needs to be room to grieve. And I recognize that that pain is real. And I wish the hostages would be set free. Like all of that, I think there's room for all of that to also coexist with that same wanting, that same want for a ceasefire, that same want for people who are being pummeled to death, being bombed, 11,000 plus, not counting the 1,300 that are still under the rubble and unaccounted for. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. You can't even digest those numbers. We're parents, right? Like we can't even digest what it's like to be a parent in Gaza right now. And did you guys hear about this new acronym that's now being coined in Gaza?
Oh, was it about the children with no parents or something like that?
The new acronym is WCNSF, Wounded Child, No Surviving Family.
Yeah. That's what I'm like. Again, I feel like I'm in the fucking Twilight Zone, man. Because I don't know how, parent or not, you can look at people who are fucking did nothing, who are trying to survive, and they're living under an occupation where that's made virtually impossible. And then you see the violence that they're experiencing, and to like, how do you look at that? And then your brain goes, well, you know, they voted for Hamas. Like, it's wild that it's almost like they're like, people are being trained or like inoculated against being able to look upon what is happening and arrive at the conclusion, which is this has to fucking stop. And that's what is like really unnerving when I see people brush this kind of shit off to kind of keep like with their sort of like rah-rahing of like the IDF and you know, continued violence. And yeah, I don't know, that's where it can be so easy to become nihilistic and so deeply cynical with all of this. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I feel like I can only continue to try and bear witness to it, because as much as I want to ignore it, I can't for the life of me think of if I was in the situation of these people, that I would be hoping that they're putting the energy, the thoughts towards kind of some kind of solution, that they will use their voices to try and speak up for me or my family and things like that. And it's that simple level of reciprocity that like people can't even get behind is also kind of, I don't know, it's like doing something to me that I really don't like, because like with every little bit of people I see not acknowledging others' humanity, like I feel like part of me becomes callous, or like gets calloused over, and I'm losing a part of it too. And just trying to, I don't know, like, to find and see if the other people are seeing the humanity in all of it.
You know, so one of the pieces that I did recently, I really like. It's a series of interviews with people who are losing their friendship circles, right? So I interviewed this one girl who was friends with this Zionist, who this Israeli guy. She's a Muslim girl. She's Arab. And they used to, like, talk about how, like, this Israeli guy grew up with Arabic culture a little bit in Israel and would like send her Arabic songs that she liked. And she would be like, oh, my mom used to make this while we were making food. Like, they had like a friendly back like relationship. But then when all of this started, he turned into almost like an internet troll, where he was just replying to all of her Instagram stories, where she was sharing some of what she was happening in Gaza and rationalizing it and calling her a Hamas supporter and all this stuff, right? That kind of thing got me curious. I was like, how is this possible, man? Like, you know who this person is.
Yeah.
You know that she was friends with you. You know that you were, like, that was never an obstacle, this, like, overwhelming hatred of, like, Jewish people writ large. Like, you know that that's not what's in her heart, for a fact, because you guys were friends for years. The piece doesn't go there. The piece talks about, like, how to keep, I talked to this person who helped co-found this like Sisterhood of Shalom Salam, where they're like a friend circle of Jewish women and Muslim women here in America who like break bread together, hang out together. And so I was like, tell me how you like cope with these kinds of like flashpoints where there's like conflict. And it was like a beautiful article. You can go and find it and read it. I wrote it, so obviously I recommend that you do. But it got me, after writing it, I was like, how is this even possible? Like, how is this person's instinct not to go, oh, we have this relationship, how is your heart, like, how are you feeling, like, what are you experiencing, how is it, like, this bombing is happening, like, I recognize your pain as much as I want you to recognize my pain. And that to me felt like the natural way to respond to something. And I was like, how is that possible? And then I was reading this old study, like this maybe from like 10-15 years ago, about how it's possible that if you see the suffering of a group that you consider to be on the opposite end of you ideologically, that could actually trigger your pleasure receptors in your brain. And I need to find this study and send it to you guys. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was so fascinating that biologically, depending on where we land on the political spectrum for some reason, how you experience the suffering of somebody could be either pain or pleasure. I was like, what the hell? And I think once I recognized that,
right,
it helped me realize what was actually important, right? Not just as a journalist, but as a human, which is like everybody just wants their pain to be recognized and to be felt. And this idea that the Palestinian pain is fake. Like you can just do a Twitter search for the phrase Pallywood.
Yeah.
And you'll see so many rationalizations and justifications for the killings of innocent people by denying that they're there in the first place, which is monstrous. But it helped me to recognize that even if I empathize with one side, I'm not just talking about Palestine and Israel, but like the idea that we need to just be better at communicating that we're hurting right now. That this is fucking painful what we're going through right now, to see these kinds of things, that, you know, like this, oh my God, man, like I'm in so much fucking pain right now.
Yeah.
Everybody's in so much fucking pain right now. Like, why are we not just giving each other hugs, man? Like, I feel like we need to do that instead of like trying to like make each other feel like you're actually manipulated and you're being lied to. So your pain is fake.
Right.
Or, oh, actually, I saw a video of a helicopter hitting Israelis, so your pain is manufactured and fake.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like only one side has the power to stop this. Only one side has the capacity to make peace. So really, like, does any of this actually matter? Maybe this is just, we're going to experience this pain and just cry it out, man. Because I got to tell you, dude, as somebody who wants the fighting to stop, and as somebody who knows that all of the power is on one side, who can make peace today if they wanted to, it feels really fucking bleak and hopeless.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when, you know, you hear things like from our own government too, where they're like, oh yeah, ceasefire, I don't know if that's possible. I don't know if that's on the table. And that's the kind of, it's kind of rhetoric that we're hearing from like people who even have any kind of leverage in the situation.
What can he do though? He's just the president.
Yeah.
What like guys, how many times does he have to tell you this? He's just the fucking president here. He can't do anything.
What do you mean to do?
What do you want him to do?
He's just the president of the United States. But vote for me. I practically don't matter, but please vote for me. Yeah, it's I think there's also like this element too of like sometimes and I don't mean to like simplify what's happening, but like interpersonally, right? Like, and sometimes when we acknowledge the pain we've inflicted on someone else, it can feel like an acknowledgement of the transgressions that were made. And I think on some level too, there are probably people who don't want to acknowledge that kind of pain because on some level they don't want to admit that there might be some level of responsibility like from their side too. So it gets locked into this bizarre fucking thing where people are just more invested in conspiracy theories than the very, very real pain and suffering that's happening, which we've said on this show, this is only going to foment more hatred and is only going to further destabilize this part of the world, radicalize more people. It's not like, so like, I'm always like, what does the Israeli government think is going to happen? Like, I'm always like help me even understand the logic.
Yeah.
That again, people are just going to say like, yeah, that was an L for us. So you win and let's just move on with our lives. That's just not how things work. And so to see that sort of like for them to continue down this road when it's so clear to every single person, like this doesn't make anybody safer, is really also just so frustrating. And yeah, it leads you to that point of like, are we just going to have to stand by and watch this all go down because everybody in power is just sort of like kind of, or at least in the, you know, empirical world, sort of knows that they're like, yeah, well, this is what we're going to do. And that's just a very difficult pill to swallow.
Yeah. No, one of the most racist things I've ever seen. No, that's not true. I've seen a lot of racist shit. But one conspiracy that drives me nuts is this like rationalizing of this ideology of hate and death that Hamas is instilling in their kids. And that's the reason why this conflict is going on.
Right.
You ever see like Israeli leaders talking about Hamas textbooks and this idea that they hate us because their kids are being taught to hate us? It's like, how removed do you have to be from what's happening on the ground to accept that as rational? I mean, even like Ben Shapiro floats this kind of thing where it's like, it's the textbooks. If you got rid of the textbooks, there will be lasting peace in this enclave that we've been bombing periodically, that we've been starving and calorie counting and, you know, mowing the lawn. And,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's under like under siege. Occupation.
It's this idea that like these kids that are going through this cannot fathomably respond to the Israeli air bombings, you know, of seeing the, like that acronym, bro, the acronym, like what's going to happen to that kid?
Right.
One of the doctors was asked that question. It's like, well, because he mentioned that the hospital that he's in that's meant to service like 600 people is now being occupied by close to 2,000 people. And many of them are just, you know, he said that kids wander in by themselves and that it's starting to feel more like a like an orphanage than a hospital. The idea that these people who have never seen or met an Israeli in their lives beyond just the bombardment, beyond the people at the guard towers, if you could even see them from as far as where the line is, where if they cross it, they'll get shot. The fact that this is their whole relationship with their neighbor for their entire lives, man, right? Yeah. They have no fucking family left. Mm-hmm. And you're going to say it's the textbooks. Right. Like that to me drives me insane. It drives me insane. And I feel like I'm the only person who like can see through it because it still feels like in the media sphere, we're still trying to find the ideological clash. Like where do these ideologies just not settle with each other? Why can't they make peace? When all you need to do is just look up what Smotrich is saying or what Ben-Gvir is saying, who are active ministers who are talking about flattening Gaza and who are talking about wanting to use Gaza as a freaking water park.
Right.
Who deny the fact that Palestinians exist at all.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, what is going on? Like, how am I the only person that just sees this shit, man? And it's like, I really, and so I feel like all of this has been like ebbing and flowing inside of me. And I'm trying to focus. I'm trying to get this work done. I'm trying to write these pieces. Mm-hmm. And then you just like get on Twitter because you get a notification and then you see this video of like
that you
this
can't
aunt,
see.
Yeah. This aunt digging through like this bag of like charred body parts of like 2 and 3 year olds, like trying to recognize the palm of this. She goes, she picks up this like half of an arm with a hand attached and she holds and she touches the hand and she goes, this either belongs to like Wasim or Nasir. Like this, you know, trying to figure out like whose scalp, because it's just like hair. Like which baby had hair like this so that they can identify the parts. And then at the same time, you're in your newsroom and you see somebody write, I don't think I've seen this at Slate, so I'm just going to say hypothetically, you're in your newsroom and then somebody writes Hamas run Ministry of Health, as if there's like dudes with RPGs and ski masks coming up with numbers and not actual trained professionals and doctors with international organizations like Doctors Without Borders in the room trying to help them account for the dead and trying to be as frugal and correct as possible. So as not to double count somebody because they got the body in pieces, right? They're trying to do this work. And then President Biden says, oh, well, I have no faith in those numbers.
Yeah.
That grief that you're feeling from seeing all of what you're seeing with your own eyes is manufactured by Hamas. And it's meant to make, to trick you into seeing what Israel is doing as evil. Like this is, it just, I cannot fathom anyone who's not outraged by this.
Right.
And it just feels like the baseline is, if you're outraged, it's because you're being tricked into outrage.
Right. Yeah. Or you yourself have so much hatred in your heart that you're just using this as a vehicle to open up some other murky door. Yeah. I mean, like the only thing. Yeah. I think the closest thing I saw to something resembling, you know, humanely functioning State Department. I mean, let's not even get started about the fucking State Department. But like apparently there's like an internal memo where a lot of like State Department employees are like, Joe Biden is spreading misinformation on the Israel-Hamas war right now. And like saying like, we're seeing war crimes be committed, but we also have a commander in chief who is complicit in what is happening there. But again, it's like, it feels like it doesn't matter how many people are out in the streets, how diverse these groups of people are, how numerous it is, and, you know, how so much of the world is on one side saying, we need to help the people, these Palestinian people, and have it brushed aside. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it reveals just a much darker system. I mean, it's always existed, but it really just puts it right in front of you, and it makes it feel completely insurmountable, which is so fucking hard to deal with.
Yeah, and it's so dangerous right now to be a journalist, man. Because on this side of the world, a lot of people are getting fired or being told to not report on this stuff because they're being active on social media. And part of me gets it, being like, yeah, you really shouldn't be like advocating for any side if you want to maintain any kind of public credibility, public facing credibility. Even if in your heart you feel like you can still do your job, but even when we talk about power, it's like, you know, there are people who are journalists who are accusing other people of like being Hamas-run journalists. Like this one guy who writes for the New York Post still has his job.
Right.
Not fired. Right. Yeah. There are journalists who are advocating for genocide still have their jobs. It just depends on which side you're advocating to get genocide. I would love to see some consistency. But one thing that we haven't talked about that I would love to bring up is this like feud over the posters. Like the kidnap posters. I know you guys have talked about it before on the show.
Yeah.
But there's this idea that, you know, if you take something down, then you have like hate in your heart, or you're doing it because you don't recognize that pain. And I don't agree with people taking it down. I think if it just bothers you, walk. It's like, especially in New York City, dude, just keep walking. It doesn't matter. But like reducing those people to caricatures of like anti-Semites, really, I think you have to avoid the thinking about the power dynamic at play, the role of postering, and how this idea of like people who don't have a voice can use the walls as canvas to like get their message out. You know, so even if you want people to care about those people who are being kidnapped, I just don't understand flattening the people who are removing them because they're in pain, because they feel like they're being sidelined, flattening them into being like pro-kidnapping. It just...
Right.
Everything about how we're having this discourse online feels both evil, not evil, it feels disingenuous, but it also feels sort of besides the point, because as long as the bombardment continues in Gaza, as long as our government keeps arming them, giving them the bombs to drop, it all just sort of feels like besides the point. Like who cares? Who cares about these posters? Who cares about ripping them down? It's like people are being blown to smithereens.
Right. Yeah. And
It
feels,
yeah,
it feels,
like, yeah, yeah, it just drives me nuts, man. It's like people, I think in America, understand what happens when you get shot. We're like the mass shooting capital of the world. Right. We don't understand what it's like to have a bomb dropped.
We don't.
Yeah. We don't know what it's like.
Unless you're like maybe like black activists in Philly or something like that.
Right. In the 80s.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We have very lopsided experiences here too. And I think that's why this shit resonates with so many people. Like I said this before, man, it's so easy to see through the bullshit if you have any kind of experience or proximity to being marginalized or oppressed. And it's wild, too, to just sort of see people be like, well, I can't identify with the oppressed, so I think I'm more like the people who are having like a nice beach time while, mm-hmm. you know, indiscriminate bombing happening less than 100
kilometers. What does proportionality look like? Like, what do you want Israel to do? It's like all that is just...
Yeah.
This feels so annoying, man.
Yeah.
Breaks my heart.
Yeah. I mean, in reading more and more about the Netanyahu like administration and just how extremely right wing it is and how unpopular and like clear eyed a lot of the criticism of that administration is, like it does feel like that if there's a way that this eventually, through just sheer number of people continuing to push on the side of humanity, you know, like versus these small extreme. I know it's very bleak right now, but the more I read about just how extreme, like it's both scary, like how did we get to this position where this is, who's in power, but it's also, it feels like a small number of extreme militants on both sides are like holding all the power, and somehow the communication needs to change so that it's that becomes clear, like a clear, yeah, to in the way the mainstream media covers it.
That's an important question. I'm not Palestinian, so I'm like, I take my cues from people who are Palestinian and Israeli who are working towards peace. You know, there are so many Israelis that want peace, and they are the vast majority as far as I'm concerned. And there are so many Palestinians that want peace, and they are the vast majority as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
The people who are wanting all or nothing are the marginalized ones.
Right.
But they get all the attention. So it's hard to see that sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, one piece that I did recently for Slate, I think kind of gets at what you're saying a little bit. He's a guy who was born in this small village in Area C. Do you guys know what like areas A, B, and C are in West Bank?
That's C, like A has like is mostly PA controlled, right? Yeah. And B is like split, and then C is all Israeli controlled, right?
Correct. Yeah. So after they made those designations, there were still, and there still are today, areas in Area C.
Oh wait, Eamon, let me just explain that, because I think most people will absolutely have no idea. Like I just did that very cat, like because we both know. Yeah, okay, because I know that it's broken up basically into three parts where the Palestinian Authority has like sort of civil control. I mean, why don't you break that down? Because I know the levels of control for Palestinian people, it varies depending on what zone you're in, right?
Yeah, so Area A is exclusively administered by the PA. Area B is administered jointly by the PA and Israel. And Area C is administered by Israel. So if you ever see like that Swiss cheese map showing all of these tiny little islands like that are not connected to each other at all, those are the Palestinian parts. There's all like maybe about the same sized islands that are like right in the middle between those are Area B. And everything around it, like all the big else. Open rural areas are Area C. So a lot of there's still like a hefty amount. So they made these divisions based on population, mostly when they did make these divisions. Israel, this was all done during the Oslo Accords. Israel made the case that they needed those rural areas to secure peace for themselves, and to also possibly defend against Jordan or Syria. So like much of the eastern side is Area C, controlled by Israel. There are still like Palestinian run farms and Palestinian villages out there. And so I interviewed a guy to see like what life was like for him out there, you know, in Area C where he was living. And what he described to me was basically night raids being done by not soldiers, but civilian settlers who are dressed in like camouflage soldier fatigues, who are armed with American guns like M16s, who show up at night and they basically zip tie all the guys and they put guns to their heads and they say, you have 24 hours to leave or we're going to come back and massacre you guys. And then they'll also destroy their olive trees. They'll shoot at their water sources. They'll pour cement into their water sources so that they can't continue to feed their trees or feed their animals. And a lot of these people are farmers and, you know, they work the land and they graze their goats or their whatever animals that they have. And so they sort of require like large amounts of land to like run their lives. And these people were coming in emboldened by what was happening, saying, okay, so there's a war going on. So now we are the law. And they'll call the cops, and the cops, because in this area, the Israel's in control. So they'll call the Israeli cops. And so when they do come, they'll back the settlers up. And there's already been people who have been shot, been killed. He talked about how he can't even vocalize that they are like angry at these people for coming in and destroying their livelihoods and sieging them, like blocking roads, and people who need medicine can't get medicine, and people who can't get, you know, it's like their kids can't go to school. These kids haven't gone to school for a month and they're nowhere near Gaza. So I talked to this guy, and you can read about it in Slate where I published it. But I asked him, I was like, what's the solution here? Like, do you have hope? And he said that my only hope, because he doesn't have hope in the governments, is that his only hope are in the free pens of the world. And what he meant was, so we did the whole thing in Arabic, and it sounded way more elegant in Arabic. But right. He was saying that his only hope is in people who are in media to tell the truth about what's happening there and to get the word out. And in that context, I was wondering, like, free pen, what does that mean? What does that mean? And then I was thinking about, like, the privilege that we have to report what we want to report, and that we are, in a way, censoring when we're not finding voices like these. And I thought of the responsibility, and I thought about, like, what we're not doing by covering those kinds of voices, and how their entire hope, their only weapon, really, is that their own story, like, that this kind of thing is happening to them. And there's nobody else that's there who's going to protect them. And nobody else is going to offer them a peaceful life. Except for us, man. Except for people who can put pressure on their governments, show the world what's happening to them. And in that context, I see journalism as being so freaking potent and so valuable and so threatening. And, you know, the Israeli government has already killed 40 plus journalists. And targeted attacks. They'll deny it was targeted. The evidence showed, the forensic analysis showed that they attacked the Reuters convoy to the north. And they even openly said that when this honest reporting thing came out, it was honest reporting is this org is like pro-Israel. It's not honest, nor they had their mission statements to divert people's attention away from what the IDF is doing. So that's why I'm saying that. But they have succeeded in painting people who were photojournalists who were documenting what was happening on October 7th as being complicit and complying and cooperating with Hamas and their executions of innocent people on that day. And so the defense minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, and the Israeli government verbalized and openly said that those people who were photojournalists are complicit and that we will be adding them to the list of people who are going to be killing in response to what happened.
Yeah.
And it just, that was another moment when I saw that I cried, because that's like, this guy is basically signing a death warrant for these photojournalists because this American-based pro-Israel org wanted to, you know, contribute to the fog of war and make things more murky so that we doubt what we see is true.
Yeah.
And I just really, if anybody who's listening gets anything from this, I just want you to know that it's dangerous to look away. And finding primary good sources is everything right now. And these people they have no other avenue for peace. That's the only way that there's going to be peace, is that enough people wake up to what's happening, realize that it's not the textbooks that's driving these people apart. It's that there is this one government in Israel, the Israeli government, that has control over everything, everything. They are in charge. And if they wanted to right now, they could find the partners for peace. And they could make peace. And without that, there's no hope. There's just not on the ground, not here. We're sitting nowhere. That's the only hope.
Yeah.
Jeez, I sound like fucking Cornel West, man.
No, you haven't called me brother enough times.
Yeah. Come on, brother.
Hey, brother Miles. You know,
I started by saying, Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Do you have, I mean, just generally, like, resources that you think... So I'm just getting all my information from X. Is that cool? Is that a good place to get? No, obviously social media has become.
All you have to do is follow Elon Musk. That's where all the true information is coming from.
Right? He speaks the truth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's getting true information because there is the kind of mainstream bias that we're seeing. And it is tough, but do you have any, like, kind of broad advice on where, how people should approach the task of, like, primary sources?
Yeah, I would say the people who are covering this best, hands down, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, is Haaretz.
Yeah.
They're an Israeli-based newspaper. They have both right-leaning and left-leaning writers. They have reporters and photojournalists who are on the ground. They have fixers in Gaza. They are right now putting out the best information. I read Haaretz in English. Sometimes there are articles that are only in Hebrew that you can, if you have a computer, you can translate. It's very easy. And also, you know, they, I think, enjoy more freedom to criticize the Israeli government than we do here in America.
For real.
I think we are very quick on this side of the water to like try and condense whoever we don't like into being some like enemy of thought, into being this person who like is being driven by hate. But these people are in Israel and many of them are Jewish. Some of them are Muslim. Some of them are whatever, you know, and they, I think, have probably they're closest to the conflict. They have primary sources, and that's what I've been using to stay up to date, you know. And one thing that I think really conveys what I'm trying to argue here, which is at the very beginning, a bunch of different organizations at Harvard issued this statement. You know, some people thought it was bad taste to, right after this terrorist attack, try to create context for what happened by saying that there was no peace for Palestinians on October 6th. And that, you know, some people have like said that, you know, it's not right to victim blame and tell people who were killed in a terrorist attack that they had it coming.
Right.
But since day one, Harris has been doing that kind of work, writing about how the conception of these kibbutzes being on the border was meant to withstand a first wave of explosion after, you know, the establishment of Gaza as this like cut off, like entire like insular, people call it an open air prison. And that these kibbutzes were put here strategically. And, you know, these are Israeli writers who are digging into the history, who understand this stuff better than we do. So I think in this country, if you want to consume media and be closer to this, I would say Haaretz is braver and they're doing some of the best work right now.
Amazing. Well, Ayman Ismail, we really appreciate you coming on.
Did
man.
We do it? Yeah. I didn't even cry once, man. Look at me.
We did it.
Made it through.
Dry eyes.
We truly appreciate it. Where can people find you, follow you, read you, all that good stuff?
They can find me at slate.com. I'm not using X because I do not want to get canceled. So I'm not on social medias right now. Right. But you can, you know, become a Slate Plus member. We're doing a lot of really, really great work.
Amazing. And is there a work of media that you've been enjoying?
I've been, I don't know if this counts, but just looking through old family photos, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been feeling like really unstable. I need to take more mental health days.
Yeah.
I've been going up and like looking at my kids when they were younger. And it just cheers me up and it cracks me up. And I have so many videos of them being silly. My kid is riding a scooter now. He's like 2 years old. So he's like, does this thing where he like pulls it to the side. He pulls one leg and tries to point it up. And I think it's like, I imagine in his head, he's probably like, that leg is touching the clouds, man. He's like, it's like soaring. But in reality, it's just sort of like, you know, just a little bit
but
behind
them.
You
can see it all on their face. That's what, they're so unguarded, you know?
And it cracks me up, man.
That's so funny.
You know?
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I know that's not like a, like, you know, it's...
Hey, that's what's helping me. Go back and look at just, yeah, there's this app on your phone called Photos. Go back and look through some old ones, folks. Yeah, that's good advice. Miles, where can people find you? Is there work in media you've been enjoying?
Yeah, find me at Miles of Gray, wherever they take the at symbols. Find Jack and I on our basketball podcast, Miles and Jack Boosties. Where, you know, take a break from the reality of our world event hellscape and just zoom in on the NBA and that hellscape. And then also you can find me on 420 Day Fiance, where I talk about 90 Day Fiance, another way I distract myself. Some media works of media I like. Okay, I got a couple. First, a literal work of media. Producer Justin was like, yo, have you seen Blue Eye Samurai yet on Netflix? And I was like, you know what? I know of it, but I have not seen it. I watched it. It's pretty dope. It's about a biracial child in, like, you know, 1600s Japan, because if you were biracial then, you were considered a fucking monster. So just kind of like looking at that, but it's like a dope, like animated samurai kind of tale. And also another tweet was actually from past guest, Dr. John Paul, at Dr. John Paul, where just posted a picture of Barney. Well, like one is like a Barney promo image, while another one was just someone like at a birthday party. I said, Lord, Barney is on that stuff. And then someone quote tweeted that at Sleep to Dream and said Ozempic is hitting every corner of the entertainment industry.
Damn, he's got that big head.
Ozempic, yeah, man, Ozempic yeah. face.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. A tweet I've been enjoying: Flea at Flea333. I don't know if that's the Flea or not. Tweeted, the great thing about the thong song is you can really feel his earnest yearning to see that thong. this person?
I know. What do you say?
I'm just double checking this person's not like
389,000 followers, I think. And also talking shit about the Clippers, that feels like Flea.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And if not, hey, that's what the account was.
You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do you think people might enjoy?
Let's go out in some like just nice, aggressive, kind of just 90s garage band rock kind of vibes. This is a track I discovered on Instagram where this dude just like walks up to people in like Washington Square Park and he's like, hey, do you make music? Until someone says yes, and then just like promotes whatever they're making. And he found a person who was friends with the lead singer of this band called Farmer's Wife. And this track is called Greg Abbott's Maxi Pad. But let me tell you, this shit is a dude, this is a There's a riff in it that I love so much.
Yeah.
It's just good. Just some like rock that gets you going. Like some Pixies demo type shit. But anyway, this is Farmer's Wife.
Early 90s, Diddy would have stolen it and put Biggie over it.
Oh yeah, yeah. And like would have slowed it down. For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is Greg Abbott's Maxi Pad by Farmer's Wife.
All right, we'll link off to that in the footnotes, as well as Harrods and other stuff we were talking about.
And this Twitter post that I just sent you to in the chat.
Yeah.
Just throw that in there at the bottom and be like, yo, Eamon wants you to see this.
All right.
Uncle Man.
That's going to do it for us this morning. We're back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.